Case is 10-2260, State of Ohio versus James Hood. For the appellant, Ms. Prendergast.
Good morning. Justice Sobieski, may it please the court. My name is Melissa Prendergast, and I represent the appellant, James Hood. At this time, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. The issue in this case is whether a criminal defendant has a constitutional right to confront at trial the party who prepared the state's evidence, in this case, cell phone tower records, where the prosecution failed to present any evidence that those records were kept in the ordinary course of business. The Sixth Amendment demands that a defendant be able to confront the witnesses against him.
What evidence would be sufficient, in your opinion, to show it was a business record?
Your Honor, in this case, evidence that would go to show that it was a business record would be an affidavit, some sort of certification attached to those records from the party who prepared those records, certifying their person with knowledge that those records were kept in the ordinary course of business, and most importantly, that it was that company's regular business practice to keep those records.
You aren't saying that we should require that the business office manager or whatever have to come in court and testify that that's a business record. An affidavit would be sufficient, in your opinion?
Yes, in this case, the rule of law we're looking for is narrow in that way. We're suggesting that because there was no evidence in this case of that authentication, that Mr. Hood should have been able to confront the preparer of those records. We're not asking the broad rule in this case that he be able to have that authentication and also confront that party at trial.
And oftentimes business records, because their business records are stipulated to, was there any request to stipulate these?
There was no stipulation. I'm not sure if there was a request for such, but there was no stipulation.
Was there an objection?
By defense counsel, there was an objection.
Doing it the right way under the normal rules of evidence was not waived at any point. Question. Was it or wasn't it?
No, Your Honor. There was an objection. There were multiple objections, primarily one lengthy objection where defense counsel did object to the admissibility of these records. They talked about it. The court decided to admit these records through the testimony of the detective who subpoenaed them.
Was one of the questions related to the cell phones about where the defendant was? And didn't the detective keep saying, I can't answer that, I don't know? Was that the relevance of the cell phone records?
The cell phone records had relevance in a number of ways. And one of those ways, you're right, Your Honor, was to pin down where Mr. Hood was, basically corroborating Mr. Hill's testimony. That Mr. Hood was with him throughout the evening, that he made certain phone calls throughout the evening. And going to the significance of these records, actually, the assistant prosecutor during the conference with the bench where the objections were being handled stated to the court, Your Honor, these records are very important for the jury to determine Mr. Hood's guilt in this case.
But that's not what they ultimately were able to do. And in fact, wasn't the Eighth District's opinion that these were not even persuasive for the guilt of your client, that they did not play the major role that maybe they were purported to be able to do when the objection was made?
The Eighth District did hold, ultimately, that the records would not have been testimonial, and then stated, assuming arguendo, there was a confrontation clause violation here, we would hold they would be harmless error. However, the test for a harmless error analysis is whether there is a reasonable probability that the evidence complained of might have contributed to the conviction. There was no analysis of the harmless error doctrine in the court. It was a summary conclusion the court made.
It wasn't a summary conclusion because there was such other cumulative evidence and these were pretty irrelevant to the whole lot of evidence that ultimately convicted your client?
Again, Your Honor, the court concluded that there was a host of evidence to convict Mr. Hood, did not identify any of that evidence, and in fact, Mr. Hill's testimony was so incredible. These records were significant to the state in that they provided this objective kind of weight to corroborate Mr. Hill's testimony that the state, the assistant prosecutor, recognized would help the jury believe Mr. Hill. Of the 10 or so witnesses that were at the party that night, not one of them was able to identify the clothing Mr. Hood was wearing. When Mr. Hood and Mr. Hill were arrested, they were also with a man named William Sparks, who was best friends with Mr. Hill, who was wearing clothing nearly identical to Mr. Hood. Mr. Sparks was originally indicted in this case, and for reasons that are not clear in the record, that indictment was dismissed.
Was there any physical evidence for Mr. Hood as related to this crime?
No, Your Honor. Well, let me back up. When he was arrested, he was in possession of a large sum of cash. I'm not sure how much exactly. There was no DNA evidence. At the scene, the only DNA evidence was a rubber glove that had Mr. Hill's DNA on it that was found attached to a fence outside. So there was, when he was arrested, he had the cash on him. There were cell phones in the car. I believe there was a little cigar tip in the ashtray of that car that had Mr. Hood. Mr. Hood couldn't be excluded from having his DNA on there.
Has any court, to your knowledge, determined that business records are testimonial and fall within the Sixth Amendment confrontation right?
Has determined that they are testimonial?
Right.
To my knowledge, Your Honor, no. There has not been a court that has held that business records are testimonial.
Contrarily, Crawford itself suggested that business records may be outside of the testimonial right to confrontation, did it not?
Yes, Your Honor. In the opinion in Crawford, the court did suggest that. However, here we don't have business records because we have no evidence that these records were kept in this form as the regular practice of the company, the cell phone. We don't even know what company they came from.
And that's because of the lack of authentication? Is that what you're suggesting?
That's right, Your Honor. I'm suggesting it was the state's burden to bring forth evidence that would establish that these records were kept in the regular course of said company's business as the regular practice of their business. They were unable, they didn't do that. I don't know.
Isn't that an evidentiary issue?
Authentication would go to establishing that it would be an exception to hearsay.
But your argument to us isn't evidentiary. It's constitutional.
Correct.
So assume for the moment they had been properly authenticated or certified in accordance with evidence rule, 803, you wouldn't be here? Or would you be making the constitutional argument? Your argument to me is confused.
Let me try to clarify. We may not be here if there was evidence that established that these records were regularly kept in the course of that company's business. However,
so records that are authenticated don't violate the same record had it been authenticated by AT&T or Sprint or Verizon, that these are records ordinarily kept in the ordinary course of business that were introduced in evidence at trial do not violate the Confrontation Clause, but the very same documents without the authentication do violate the Confrontation Clause. Is that your position?
Well, Your Honor, these are not the very same documents that have been held in, namely, the 11th Circuit to be business records that do not violate the Confrontation Clause.
Well, assume for the moment, for purposes of my question, that they are. What I'm trying to understand is you're not making an evidentiary argument to us. You're making a constitutional argument. And if they are the very same record, one authenticated and one not, you think one violates the Constitution and one doesn't? Or have I not understood your argument?
Well, I disagree with the respectfully disagree with the premise. They are not the same if this document isn't attached to the preparer's statements and certification that these records are what they purport to be.
Well, let me ask you a different question the other way. If these records had been authenticated, and the very same records had been authenticated, you told me you wouldn't be here. You
probably
may very
not.
Well not be here.
Probably not.
But your problem is authentication. It isn't confrontation.
The problem here, Your Honor, is that there was no evidence that they were business records sufficient under 8036. However, what there is evidence of is that these records were prepared solely for an evidentiary purpose pursuant to the law enforcement's request for use to prove a fact at a later criminal prosecution. We do have evidence of that. We do not have evidence that these particular records were kept in this particular
and
form.
And these records were prepared for purposes of law enforcement by whom?
By a party that was not identified.
Well, you said they were prepared by... What is the evidence of the preparedness of these records?
Well, we understand that the subpoena is not a part of the record, but we have testimony from the detective that a subpoena was issued to a we don't know what company. We have these records. We can't make that leap to assume without that authentication that these are business records of said company. We only know that law enforcement requested this evidentiary record to prove a certain fact, specifically facts that would place Mr. Hood with Mr. Hill at a criminal prosecution.
Ms. Pendergast, the idea of confrontation relates to testimonial statements. So are you saying that because there was no authentication, there's the possibility that these records were prepared for purposes of law enforcement and thus became testimonial? That's the only way you get to the confrontation issue, is to say that what we're talking about here is testimonial and therefore subject to cross-examination
right.
by the defendant.
Yes, and these records are testimonial because we know that they were created solely for an evidentiary purpose, for use at Mr. Hood's criminal trial, made an aid of police investigation, and that ranks as testimonial evidence.
Well, counsel, would these records have been able to be constructed? When you say they were created solely for the police, the prosecution's use at trial, if a layperson, the owner of the phone, would have called the phone company and say, prepare a record of my cell phone usage and location during a certain period of time, would that be provided to the user, the owner of the phone?
I'm not sure exactly what would be provided. I'm sure that something would be provided to the user, but what we don't know is whether these particular exhibits would be provided in this particular form. We don't have any evidence that this is the form, the record that is kept in the regular course of business by that said cell phone company.
Did defense counsel attempt to subpoena the custodian of the records to rebut that the records were not what they purported to be?
I don't know for sure, but I don't believe so. And that would not be the defendant's burden to subpoena the records. This is the state's evidence, and
I understand
that. Flip the burden. And under the case law, in fact, in Crawford, there was Justice Scalia discussed this very issue at length and said that that's not an argument against this issue because it flips the burden. It's the state's evidence. It puts it on the defense, and it's the defense's
right.
But
in Crawford, we were talking about people. We were talking about people giving statements. And so I believe one of my colleagues asked, and I want to make sure I understand your argument as well, has there been any court that has held that records are testimonial? Because what you're saying, if we were under simply the failure to authenticate, you're under a harmless error analysis. But if we accept your argument that it's a violation of the Confrontation Clause, then it's a constitutional issue. Has there ever been a court that has held that business records are testimonial?
Not to my knowledge, but again, we don't have business records here. We have exhibits that all we know were created for this trial. We don't have evidence that's required to prove that these are business records as would be required under the business record rule. That evidence has to be there.
Has there been another court that has applied the Crawford analysis to documents kept in the ordinary course of business?
Yes, Your Honor. A number of courts, but most notably the 11th Circuit, I believe it was addressed in Appley's brief, also addressed in the reply brief in Yaley Davis, State v. Yaley Davis. It was a federal appeal at which the argument was raised that these particular Verizon cell phone records were testimonial under Crawford, and the admission of those without the custodian coming in to testify would violate the Confrontation Clause. However, in that case, those records were attached to an affidavit, a certification signed by the person with knowledge that prepared these records, stating that these were business records for Verizon, that these were the business records that were typically kept in this particular form, that they had not been changed in any way, that they had simply been pulled from their network. That evidence was there, and that is what tipped the scales in favor of that court's decision. That was a dispositive issue.
But you would have us make the leap that if that affidavit doesn't exist and there are no authentication, if there's nothing there to authenticate the records, that they automatically become testimonial.
I wouldn't describe it as a leap, because there is evidence that these documents were created in response to law enforcement's request for the primary purpose of proving a particular fact at a later criminal prosecution.
The law enforcement created them?
No, the law enforcement requested this evidence.
Requested them?
Requested this evidence, and what we know is that this evidence was created in response to that request from law enforcement for use at the later criminal prosecution to prove particular facts.
And then the contents of the document that we're just talking about was the subject of some vigorous cross-examination of the detective. Is that correct?
At that point, yes, Your Honor, the trial court had indicated, had overruled defense's objection, had admitted the records, and defense counsel did what effective counsel would do and cross-examined the detective on them.
And he was cross-examined to give assurance that it wasn't the law enforcement that created these records.
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
There was assurance given during the course of the cross-examination that law enforcement itself did not create these records, that they were given from the cell phone company to law enforcement pursuant to the subpoena.
I do believe that the detective did say that he himself did not create these records, but that doesn't get us to that doesn't serve as proof that these are non-testimonial business records, that these weren't created pursuant to the specific subpoena requesting this specific information for use in this specific trial. We don't know if there was information deleted from these records. We don't know the length of time.
That not asked of the detective?
Whether the detective
modified the record that was received pursuant to the subpoena?
Well, we do know he modified the record to the extent that he wrote all over them and noted at one point, this is when the burglary happened and these are the different numbers.
And that's pretty obvious, and he admitted, and that was subject, again, of his cross-examination. But was there any testimony that he had altered the records, taken numbers and locations out, or added numbers and locations?
Not that the detective had done that. And the gist of the argument, though, is that we don't know what the preparer of those records did. We don't know, because we were unable to confront the party who prepared those records, we do not know what changes were made to them, what was added, what was taken away, how they're interpreted, how they were created.
They weren't really interpreted except by the detective.
Correct, which is the problem.
Counsel, I'd like to ask a slightly different question. Let's assume, for the purposes of argument, that we do not find the records to be testimonial. Does the fact that you're challenging the proper authentication of them still require a reversal or a new trial?
I would submit that, yes, even if this court holds that there was not a violation here under the Confrontation Clause, there was still not sufficient evidence to admit these particular records without the custodian. This would be required under the rules. And I've asked that the court remand it to the Court of Appeals for a determination of that issue.
Thank you.
The court has no further questions. I will save any remaining time for rebuttal. Thank you.
Ms. Sobieski.
Good morning, Chief Justice O'Connor and Justices, and may it please the court. Kristen Sobieski from the Cuyahoga County Prosecutor's Office here on behalf of the State of Ohio.
Your Honor, Counsel, would it have been difficult to have a custodian of the records come in and testify and authenticate them so this issue doesn't arise?
It would not have been difficult. It can be done. It is done on occasion. On other occasions, there's an authenticating certificate or letter, something indicating what these are, where they come from, how they've appeared. We did not have a custodian of records testify in this case. And so we are here to discuss what should happen. Was the admission of these records erroneous, and could it possibly have violated Confrontation Clause rights of the defendant? And the state submits that.
Do you think they were properly admitted?
There was no custodian of records who testified.
I know that.
And so
the rule says you have to have one.
And the rule requires.
They were authenticated. So do you think they were properly admitted?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, so now we have evidence that should have been excluded by a trial court, but wasn't.
That's right.
So what is our analysis now? Do we go to harmless error? Do we go
yes.
to plain error? Where do we go?
It is evidentiary. It's a procedural matter of the evidentiary issue here, and the Court of Appeals would review that for harmlessness. Trial court has
that been done?
Yes, it has.
And
the Eighth District has concluded that the error, any error in the admission of these cell phone records was harmless.
Is that issue of the determination of the appellate court on the harmlessness of this evidence before us?
I don't believe that it truly is. I think that the Court of Appeals has applied the appropriate standard, looked at simply, if they're assuming there's an authentication issue and these were not properly authenticated, if the admission was erroneous, okay, it's harmless. And beyond that, what's really critical is what the Eighth District said. They even went to consider that constitutional argument, which the state submits is a step beyond where they even needed to go because there's no confrontation issue here. But the Eighth District went and considered that and said, assuming that these records were inadmissible and did violate the defendant's right to confront witnesses, any error on the part of the trial court in this regard was harmless.
Well, counsel, your opponent says that they didn't, I asked her about this, and they said that the Eighth District didn't do an appropriate analysis of this harmless error.
Respectfully, Your Honor, I completely disagree with that. The Eighth District went through all of the steps, the appropriate steps, considering what would make the record properly authenticated, noting all of the correct areas.
That's for
of law.
The whether or not it was should have been in to begin with. But they're saying even if it shouldn't have been in, it's harmless error.
That's right.
And to draw the conclusion that it's harmless error, the criticism is that it wasn't analyzed sufficiently to draw that conclusion that it was harmless error, which would, I don't know what, we could send it back for a more conclusive or expansive analysis, but I don't, what's necessary in order to reach that? What kind of an analysis?
I don't think anything further than what has already been done is required. The court went through in its opinion reciting the relevant facts of this case, what the evidence was at trial. You know, we're talking about the confrontation issue and that first assignment of error. There was a manifest weight issue as well. Court thoroughly discussed facts there, too. It isn't as if we can say that the court, that the 8th District wasn't fully aware or didn't fully consider all of the other facts and evidence in this case. I think that opinion is clear that it did. And it did sort through this record and comb through and determine that these cell phone records did not contribute to the defendant's convictions.
Counsel, do we, to resolve this case, do we need to offer a blanket opinion as to whether or not business records can ever come in the category of being testimonial or not?
What the state would be asking the court for is a firm decision, clear instruction that cell phone records in particular are non-testimonial business records.
And those are mechanical. There's no opinion involved in them. What I'm concerned about is that we start writing in this area, we lay down something that would let business records that are ordinarily kept, but they involve interpretation or opinion of the person who kept those records. That would be a different matter, would it not?
It would certainly be a different matter. Cell phone records are nothing like the kinds of forensic reports that require, you know, where there's a testing procedure involved that might be debatable scientifically, where, you know, perhaps some calibration of equipment could be called into question, what the results were, interpretation of testing results. Cell phone records are nothing like that.
But that's not exactly true. I mean, even in the Court of Appeals decision, they talk about the failure to have the custodian there could not explain why Mr. Hood's cell phone was inexplicably, to use the Court of Appeals language, making calls to Mr. Hill when they were allegedly together. So to say that the evidence is harmless really isn't quite true, because the whole issue was Mr. Hill's testimony about where Mr. Hood was, and he said he was with Mr. Hood. Yet according to these records, and again, the detective kept saying, I don't know, I don't know, the records demonstrate that Mr. Hood's cell phone kept calling Mr. Hill, which why would he do that if the two of them were together? So it isn't just about a calibration. It's a very fact-specific question that without the custodian there remained unanswered.
Without the custodian there, the records were unauthenticated. But in terms of their relevance or their evidentiary value, the 8th District did just that, removed the records from the analysis and evaluating the remainder of the evidence, and still said these records did not contribute to the convictions. So that's why the state initially did use them, did want to have them admitted, was to show that these parties were in contact with each other, were making phone calls together, were together on the night of this home invasion and the murder. But they were not, the records by themselves were not conclusive evidence of any element of the crime, where there was no other additional elements to also establish that.
The custodian of the record would not be able to even answer that question. The custodian of the record just says these are the records, and then you would, if you had some confusion about that, you'd bring in some other person to say that's what this means or that's what could happen or whatever. They are what they are, and you don't cross-examine the custodian as to why Mr. Hill was calling his own cell phone.
And that's right. And that's another thing that the 8th District specifically noted, that the defendant's inability to cross the custodian on the accuracy or the, you know, the compilation process of the data was harmless in this case. And again, this is an authentication issue, which is wholly separate from any constitutional confrontation issue.
So you're saying lack of authentication is not does not make records testimonial?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely. And these records are non-testimonial. When we're talking about there's some discussion about the creation of the records as if they were created when the grand jury subpoena was sent to the cell phone companies. That's not when this data was collected. That's not when the records were created. The cell phone companies are, recording, collecting this data contemporaneous with the phone calls that are being made back in January 2009.
Is there anything in the record that would let us conclude that these are records that are ordinarily kept in the course of business, or determine that they were prepared at the request of Detective Viverka for purposes of trial?
I'm sorry, if you could repeat that one more time.
What I'm trying to ascertain is, if I understood the argument Ms. Prendergast made to us, is that these are not records that were ordinarily kept in the ordinary course of business. Rather, she said, they were prepared in response to a subpoena that was issued by the detective. And I asked you, is there anything in the record that would let us conclude whether they were in the former category or in the latter category?
Everyone agrees that the detectives obtained these via grand jury subpoena. The records that, as they came in, there was no legitimate question as to what these documents were in terms of...
Well, obviously, there was no defense counsel present for a grand jury. So, obviously, they only came for purposes of the state's presentation to the members of the grand jury.
But that's not why they were maintained by the company. And that's what makes them...
Well, that's not what I asked you. I'm trying to ascertain whether these were records that were prepared in response to a subpoena by the company for purposes of grand jury presentation, or whether these are records that are ordinarily kept in the ordinary course of business.
Because we have an authentication issue in this case, the record does not give this court much to go on in terms of testimony.
So there's nowhere in the record we can determine that.
I'm sorry?
There's nowhere in this record or transcript that we can determine the answer to that question.
That we can determine that these are ordinarily kept and why they're kept. Is it really, billing purposes, managing subscriber accounts?
So the answer is it's not in the record.
It's not in the record. And that is the basis, that was the basis of the state's motion to dismiss this particular appeal. We agree that there was an authentication issue. But even with that authentication issue, certainly no confrontation issue, and essentially the 8th District Court of Appeals got it right.
But what? So there's really nothing left for us to write except we can write an opinion that says this is not a confrontation issue. It is appears to be a business record.
Yes.
Can you explain how a prosecutor and a trial judge, neither one, seem to know the rules of evidence?
I can't explain how these records came in without some official form of authentication.
Basic law school evidence 101, isn't it?
I agree, Your Honor. Clearly, the better course is to have all of that.
Well, the only course.
And the only course. However, when these errors do occur, we're left, and that's what we're left with. What do we do in the event that evidentiary procedure was not properly adhered to? And what do we do? We look and determine whether the error was harmless, and that's what's happened here. The 8th District has already concluded
and,
it was
and
harmless.
That issue you maintain isn't even in front of us as to whether or not it was harmless error.
I apologize.
Didn't you maintain in response to Justice O'Donnell's questions that the issue of whether or not it was harmless error is not in front of us?
That's right. I don't believe that that's, I don't think that there is any disagreement between the parties as to whether harmlessness is the right analysis to apply, or harmlessness beyond a reasonable doubt, if there could ever be a confrontation issue. That's what was used by the 8th District, and they drew an appropriate conclusion after applying that analysis.
Although there is a dispute as to whether the court did, in fact, conduct a correct harmless error analysis.
We disagree as to whether that the analysis that was conducted was thorough enough. The state submits that certainly it was. Reading that, the opinion in its entirety, it's hard to come to a different conclusion as what the state is submitting to the court this morning. In terms of finding these records to be truly non-testimonial business records. I submit to the court that there's a number of factors that we can look at here to actually come to that conclusion, even in this case, without the true proper authentication. These lines of data that are on these pieces of paper, these call logs, the cell tower information, they're not collected by any cell phone company in anticipation of a criminal prosecution. Cell phone companies are not collecting and maintaining this data because they are anticipating that their phones and their service is being used criminally. That information is gathered and collected and managed by them for their own legitimate business purposes.
And how do we know that? We don't even have records that are properly authenticated, so how do we know how they kept them, why they kept them, and all of that, even to reach the question of whether or not they're confrontational or not.
I understand that, Your Honor, and that is the very reason why this particular case may not present sufficient enough record for the court to come out with that direct conclusion that cell phone records are not testimonial. They are business records, and they cannot raise confrontation implications. We did not have that proper authentication here, but the court does have those exhibits in front of it as part of the record to review. Nobody was disputing that they didn't know what these, picking up the piece of paper, that they didn't know what that was on there. Everyone understood what they were. They were provided well in advance of trial through discovery. But again, we do have that authentication problem. But even with that problem, that is a separate matter from this issue of confrontation violation. And the state is asking that this court find that there was no confrontation violation. The 8th District Court of Appeals did get a correct finding the admission of these cell phone records to be harmless in this case. Thank you.
Counsel, if we would determine that there was a confrontation violation, does that automatically require a reversal?
No, Your Honor. If this court were to hold that there was a right confrontation violation, then the adequate inquiry after that would be whether the error was harmless. And it bears
repeating. So whether we say these were unauthenticated business records that should have had the custodian accompany them to trial, or whether we don't determine them to be any kind of business records whatsoever, they still had to have a human being that was going to explain their relevance and their creation, correct? And that human being was not, or a document being authenticated, but that was not presented at trial. So the confrontation issue will always get us to the harmless error analysis.
Correct.
And is that one of your that's not one of the errors that or one of the propositions that we have before us here.
That's correct. It was not a separate proposition of law. However, Mr. Hood would still submit this court has the power to, remand it to the Court of Appeals for proper determination of the harmless error analysis. And it bears repeating to that, and as far as that analysis goes, that Mr. Hill's testimony, in exchange for his testimony, some 10, 12 charges were dropped, and he received a sentence of 3 years for his role in these crimes.
And all right. Thank you.
Thank you.
We will take the matter under advisement, and you will be notified of our decision.